Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, and joining me in the dugout, my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, hello.
No Chris Zook today. No call from the bullpen. He's in a. I guess there's no UL. There's the IL, of course, but there's no like unavailable list. He's been DFA'd maybe for the week. We'll put it that way. He won't be calling in, but it is a busy week nonetheless, as this is our last episode before the trade deadline, and rumors are swirling. But before we get to that, I know, based on what he's wearing, his choice of garb today, that Brian needs to take a moment. I should, like, find some, like, somber, like, string music to play underneath this.
There's no, I don't know, necessarily need, doesn't need to be, like, a somber string. I just want to thank Troy Tulowitzki. He announced his retirement, and while I know that there are a lot of bitter Jays fans out there, I remember exactly where I was when I found out about the Troy Tulowitzki trade. I remember what I was doing. I remember how excited I was. You know, the Jays got off of Jose Reyes's contract, and they got, at the time, one of the best shortstops in baseball. Often injured, but like the 2015 from July onward was the most fun I've ever had as a Jays fan. And Tulo was an integral part of that. He was such an important part of that, and he comes in and hits a home run during his first game as a Jay, and he was awesome. Part of that super amazing comeback in the 2015 ALDS against the Rangers. And I just, man, he was awesome while he was here.
I guess because of the bat flip, I kind of really don't associate Tulo with that ALDS and making that happen, right? Like, I mean, the indelible image is Joey Bats.
Right. But like that comeback.
Really, I mean, because, I mean, he had issues with injuries and staying on the field even when he was with Colorado. I mean, he was an exceptional shortstop, right? I mean,
would have been a Hall of Famer had he not been injured all the time.
This is the thing. Like, if, you know, based on, like, a per-game rate, fantastic one offensive producer and a pretty decent glove. And
found his bat eventually, too.
Yeah. But because he was injured so often, I mean, first of all, it's a guy you just never drafted in fantasy because you just knew you would have to, like, take a second short.
He always ended up on one of my teams just because you knew that, like, if he was healthy during the playoffs, he could win you the playoffs.
If he was healthy. I never put stock in that one.
That's fair.
That's why I'm playing the somber string music for him.
He won me two leagues.
There you go.
Tulo won me two leagues.
He won you two leagues, and he was responsible for one of your highest highs as a Jays fan.
Or, yeah, I mean,
I guess technically your highest high for, as a Jays fan.
Yeah, absolutely, because, I mean, like, I wasn't a fan when I was 2 and 3.
Sure.
But, yeah, you know, the home run that he hit in the fifth inning of Game 3 of the 2015 ALDS really started the comeback. They were down 2-0 in the series at that point. They were only up 2-0. You know, the Rangers were playing really well, and Tulo walks up and pumps a first pitch fastball into the second deck for three runs and put them kind of out of sight and just made them say, we're winning this. Yeah. We are winning this series.
Well, foot on the neck kind of moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're coming back. There's nothing you can do about it. And we're going to win this series. They went back to Toronto and he hit another home run in game four. And like, he was super important. Yeah, the bat flip was obviously like a really important part of that series and the most iconic, one of the most iconic moments in Blue Jays history. But Tulo, like without Tulo, that can't happen.
No, that's true. Did it bother you at all that he ended up on the Yankees?
No, he always wanted to be there as a kid. And I knew that. You know, as soon as, I don't ever think the Jays should have bought him out, honestly. Like, he's a good coach and a good mentor, mm-hmm. and I think that they should have kept him on. So I don't know. No, it doesn't. He always wanted to play there. It doesn't surprise me that he ended up there. He only was there for like a week anyways.
This is true. You know, all things considered, he didn't spend a lot of time in pinstripes. Although I can hold it against people if they wanted to be a Yankee from childhood on, but that's just me as a Twins fan. We are going to turn from folks who are retired to folks who may get dealt and talk trade deadline as it is looming. I guess we'll start. We'll keep it with the Jays tip and talk about the fact that you were mentioning off air about Marcus Stroman, and a lot of people thought he was going to get dealt. He certainly seemed like the most appealing of the potential trade targets that the Jays had on offer. Everyone's looking for arms.
Yeah, look, this isn't me saying the Jays shouldn't be sellers, because the Jays should be sellers. I just don't necessarily think that Marcus Stroman is the right person to sell. If you can find someone that wants to or believes in Aaron Sanchez, then I think you trade him, if that's even possible at this point. But I think you trade Daniel Hudson. I think you trade Ken Giles. I think you trade Justin Smoke. I think you trade Freddie Galvis. I think you try to see if you can trade Randall Grichuk. But other than that, you know, the bats are going to be ready soon, right? Vlad is here. Vlad is playing. Biggio is good. You know, you got to figure out what the heck's going on with first base, because Rowdy has not been particularly good, but I don't think Smoke's the long-term answer there either. Bo Bichette is coming. Teoscar Hernandez has been pretty decent. Laurytis Gurriel has been amazing. Danny Jansen has finally found his bat. The bats are going to be ready. Either next year or the year following, the bats are going to be ready, and the Jays are going to have an above league average offense. And you have no arms outside of Nate Pearson, who's probably not going to be ready by that time, and Sean Reed Foley, who we don't even know if he's ever going to be ready. So, you know, that's where you're going to have to spend the money in free agency. So why not spend it on a guy who's here, who you know is good, who you know can pitch in Toronto, and who wants to be here? I just don't get the idea of trading him. Like, you're going to trade away Marcus Stroman for prospects that you hope you can turn into Marcus Stroman. Right? Like, yeah. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
This is very true. Obviously, as I said, you know, it's an arms race, really. Like, there's no one really looking for like some outstanding bat. Most teams seem
they want pitchers.
The teams that are in contention are not looking for offensive production. They're looking for pitchers, predominantly starters. Some teams have some gaps in their bullpen, so a lot of the names getting thrown around are pitchers. Obviously, I would say the biggest name that's believable is Mad Bum. That San Francisco, like, there's potential for trade. The Thor stuff, like, Mets say they're interested in offers, but based on what they're asking for, I don't think they're actually interested
in
offers.
The reported ask for Syndergaard is two top 30 prospects and then another 150, like, top 150 prospect. So you're having to give away, like, most likely you're having to give away your organization's three best prospects in order to get Noah Syndergaard, and that's not happening.
Yeah, because some teams maybe have one in the top 30.
Right, and
so they're instantly conceivably ruled out of what the Mets are asking for. And then the teams that have, so let's say, two in the top 30, probably then they're... there might be a gap because of, you know, depending on the year or the depth of their system. You're right. Like it really probably is the top three on any developmental chart for a squad.
Yeah. I mean, like, for example, like the apparent ask from the Yankees is that they, you know, they want Miguel Andujar, Clint Frazier, and Estevan Florial. And that's like, that's not happening. The Yankees aren't going to do that. And the Mets probably are, you know, going to ask for, are asking for even more than that because they hate the Yankees. But I don't blame them. But yeah, like, if that's the kind of ask they're asking for, like, Syndergaard's not getting traded. Syndergaard is not moving anywhere, which is really silly and stupid, I think, because the Mets are bad and they should be looking at getting more prospects and figuring it out.
Now, the Mad Bum, this has gotten complicated too, but obviously for like a different reason. Like, I honestly have never put stock in the Mets front office being like genuine. Like, they say, oh yeah, we'll entertain trade offers for Noah Syndergaard, but they basically price themselves out of any legitimate offers from teams with something that, like, with teams with a need and teams with the ability to pay.
Right.
Whereas
it's
San
like
Francisco,
Atlanta, right? Like, the teams that are available to pay for that are, like, pretty much Atlanta. Maybe the Twins, I guess, could probably do it. But you'd have to include...
You probably have to include Royce Lewis.
You got to include Royce Lewis, and you probably got to include Kirilloff.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily think that
I don't think
gonna,
you're doing that.
They're going to do that.
I don't think you do that. You maybe include
again,
one of those guys, but not both.
You've got a kind of Jays situation where you've got these young bats.
They're
this,
ready.
This, like, on the precipice, I mean, team that's hitting the cover off the ball.
Yeah.
Obviously, pitching is a need. This has been a, like... half decade trend with the Twins, but like, do you put all your eggs in the Syndergaard basket? I don't think so necessarily.
I mean, he's talking about another guy who's hurt all the time.
Exactly. And really, like, probably the price they would have to pay to get him versus like a much cheaper option is to address that bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, like, again, like, you could go and trade like a mid-level prospect and get Ken Giles, or trade a mid-level prospect and get, you know, Sam Dyson or Will Smith.
So I was going to say Will Smith would be one that I would target. However, all of
apparently
the San Francisco Giants stuff is up in the air.
Oh, the Giants were, quote, like a anonymous source inside the Giants bullpen said that clubhouse will, quote unquote, go ballistic if the Giants turn into sellers at the deadline, specifically if they trade Mad Bum or Will Smith, which I find completely nonsensical. As of yesterday, Fangraphs and all the projection sites, right? Fangraphs and Steamer and Zips and everything, Baseball Reference, 538, they all have the Giants at around someplace in between 5-7% chance to make the one game wild card spot. 5-7% chance. You do not bank on that. If you walk into a casino and made bets on things that were 5-7% chance of happening, you'd lose a lot of money in a hurry.
Absolutely. So June 29th, the Giants were 35-47. They were 8.5 out of the wild card, and their record was second worst in the NL ahead of only the Marlins.
Look, they're...
So they've gone on a tear.
They have gone on a tear, but the underlying statistics say that it's still not good enough.
Contention. They've won their past five games against division rivals, including a sweep of the Padres. But it's the Padres. It's not like... I mean, the Padres obviously are like an emerging team, but it's not like they just beat the Dodgers. Like, they didn't sweep the Dodgers.
No, and like...
And they've got more games against quality teams coming up
they still
on the
have,
horizon.
They still have six games left against the Brewers.
Yeah. No, it's not a done deal, and I haven't looked up their run differential, but I think that's part
it's
of the reason that
brutal.
The Zips and 538 and stuff don't.
It is the worst in the league, I think. It's so unconscionably bad that, like, I don't understand why you would even, like, you shouldn't. Under no circumstances should you, if you are the Giants, should you even think
minus
about
43.
It? It's awful.
They are 20th.
It's awful. They should not be attempting to make any sort of run. Trade Mad Bum, okay? Trade Mad Bum, trade your bullpen, do whatever you can, get prospects back, because you have the worst farm system in baseball. You are not going to make the playoffs, and even if you do, you are going to get smoked in that one game wild card, or if you manage to get lucky enough to make it out of there, you're getting smoked in the DS, and that's not worth it. It is not worth it.
So yesterday on MLB.com, Mark Feinsand quoting a source with knowledge of the team's plans, that the Giants are poised to become buyers.
Nonsense. And, absolute nonsense.
This is if they're still in the thick of the wild card race following this weekend.
They still have...
That on Monday, it's almost all but certain that lefty Madison Bumgarner will not be traded, regardless of how the weekend goes, but that there is a strong potential if they win this weekend that they become buyers.
Okay, so just to put this perspective, they still have 6 games against the Phillies. Okay? They've got 6 games against the Cubs. They have 5 games against the Diamondbacks. They have 5 games against the Braves, 4 games against the Cardinals, 9 games against the Dodgers, and 8 games against the Rockies still left to go. A lot of those are losses. A lot of those games are losses.
The Rockies are right around them on the old run differential, too, at
Three games against Boston as well in that mix.
But they're definitely like 100-plus runs different than Boston.
They have a home-and-home against Oakland, 2-2. Like, I'm not saying that they can't, but a lot of those games are losses. A lot of those games are going to be losses.
This is one of the situations where I wonder about the kind of psychology of a front office and the decision-making that goes on here. Because I have to imagine there's probably push from the players themselves and possibly, like, from the skipper or, like, the coaching staff about, like, don't give up on us. Look at us. We're close. There's also the, like, what impact does this have on butts in the seats if we show that we're giving up versus if we look like we're trying? Much that weighs against, like, the reality of, like, the hard statistics and looking at, you know, like, I mean, there's enough quants in every front office now that someone is looking at these run differentials and saying, guys, like,
there's
let's
no chance.
Pump the brakes on this.
Of course. So if this were the Twins, if this were the Twins, if this were the Padres, if this were the Mariners that were in this situation, you know, I'd say, like, it's worth it because you haven't had a lot of playoff success.
Yeah, we're talking about
recently
a team that has multiple World Series rings.
3 World Series in the past 20 years.
Yeah. It's not necessarily
in the past 10 years, actually. 3 World Series rings in the past.
It's not a starving fan base.
No, that's
this isn't like a,
no.
You need to push all your chips into the middle of the
this
isn't a Raptors situation where you take that risk on a 1 year.
You don't need to take the shot. You have 3 wins. There's 3 World Series wins in the past 10 years. That front office has an insane amount of capital built up. Now, you know, as for the clubhouse question, right? Well, one of the arguments I've heard, and I think it's nonsensical, and I'm going to completely go against it right now, is you go, oh, well, you have to show your players that you're willing to go for it when the team is good enough, right? But the team, A, isn't good enough, and B, how many of these guys are actually going to be in the Giants clubhouse when you're good again? Probably none. Probably none. We're going to go with none. Is Kevin Pillar going to be there in 5 years when they're good? No. Is Buster Posey going to be there in 5 years when they're good? Probably not. Pablo Sandoval, Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, no.
Do
no,
you owe it to these guys?
No. Even Mike Yastrzemski, he's 28. Is he going to be there? No. Like, you don't owe it to these guys. They won you rings. You did everything you could to help them win rings. And don't if you're the Giants and you become buyers at this deadline and trade what little, minimal prospect capital you have back, you are going to be bad for 10 years. You're going to be the Miami Marlins.
Acquiring prospect capital. Like, they have, I would say that the top available starter in Mad Bum?
Maybe.
In terms of pedigree, like, certainly in terms of, like, potential, there are some other arms out there.
I think I'd rather have Matt Boyd. I think I would rather attempt to get Mike Minor or Lance Lynn. But, yeah.
I think in terms of a name.
Right.
And someone who's done it at the biggest stage.
Right.
Right? Like, if I was the Twins and I thought, okay, there's a strong chance we're, you know, we need pitching in that first round, in the ALDS.
Who's pitching game 3 for us?
And I look at the video of Mad Bum, like, annihilating everyone in that one World Series. Right? Like, just... like pitching 8-9 innings.
Right, but he's not that Mad Bum.
I know he's not that Mad Bum, but Mike Minor doesn't have that tape. Mike Minor hasn't been there, hasn't done it in that situation.
Fair.
And if I'm desperate to get past the Yankees and I need someone who has the experience in a situation like pitching in New York in game two of an ALDS, I want Mad Bum.
I'm going to laugh really hard when the Yankees go out and get Mike Minor and whoever goes out and gets Mad Bum and Minor just pitches lights out and Mad Bum gives up four in the third.
Well, I won't be laughing if it's...
Well, I mean, not if it's the Twins, but...
But I'm just saying, like, in terms of, like, achieving the aim of getting draft capital, of getting, like, restocking your...
They need to be traders.
Your roster.
They need to be sellers.
Mad Bum is going to fetch a price.
Yeah, and so is that
Will
bullpen.
Smith is going to fetch a price.
Yeah, Sam Dyson's going to do it too. If you want to trade Maranta, he's going to do it as well, right? Like, I've heard an interesting thought that the Giants should just package up their whole bullpen, right? And be like, we have one of the best bullpens in the league. Come and get it. Trade us prospects, and you get our whole bullpen. Because their whole bullpen is better than most teams' whole bullpens, right? Like, how... You know, the Twins just DFA'd Blake Parker, right? Like, how much would the Twins pay for that bullpen, right? To just be able to, like, okay, we're keeping Trevor May and we're keeping Taylor Rogers, but, like, the rest of the bullpen, we're just up and getting, you know, the four best bullpen pitchers from the Giants. Like, that helps you win series right there, right?
No, absolutely. And if you do something like that, which I don't think has ever been done, but if you acquired like a bunch of guys who are used to playing together,
oh, that'd be great.
Like
you're instantly
bringing
building
in that instant,
yeah.
Like rather
chemistry.
Than trying to fit the like odd guy out into the new squad, you bring over a bunch of guys who have that already. I have to imagine there's like a leg up. In terms of adjustment and yeah. Just like how quickly you hit the ground running on this. Like
it's kind of been done before, kind of, right? Who was it a couple of years ago? Was it Washington that just bought, Oakland's bullpen pretty much wholesale. They got three guys from that bullpen, right? They got Doolittle and who else did they get? They got three guys from that bullpen though and sent back Blake. That was in the Blake Trinan trade.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about the Trinan one.
So, and the A's got Jesus Luzardo in that deal.
So, amongst the other teams who might be, there was a piece from Ian Brown that Dave Dombrowski saying there's not a lot of needs per se and that it's likely that the Red Sox stand pat. The Yankees, of course, have been pretty much mentioned in any addition of a starter.
Yeah, it's funny. They keep bringing in guys to be their number three starter, and every single one of those guys ends up not being good enough to be their number three starter.
Masahiro Tanaka got lit up by the Red Sox, gave up 12 runs and 3 1/3.
And who knows when Severino's coming back. So what does their rotation even look like right now? Like you've got Paxton one.
So Tanaka, Paxton, Happ, Herman, and Sabathia.
Yikes.
And then obviously Tanaka just gave up that pretty egregious thing.
That's not
so
good.
So Herman, he turns 27 this coming month. He's already thrown 91 2/3 innings, which is only 2 1/3 shy of his total in the majors and minors combined from last year.
He's
good. Never thrown 125 in any season. He has been great. He's got a 12-2 record and a 4.03 ERA. Which, I mean, ridiculously is actually a pretty decent thing at this point. But yeah, again, Mark Feinstein from MLB.com, this was a piece he posted this morning about top starters Yanks should target at deadline. You know, this is something...
All of them?
Basically, I mean, Bauer, unlikely. Stroman, it's sounding less and less likely. Mike Minor, who you mentioned, that's definitely conceivable. Yep. Could see that happening. Robbie Ray from the Diamondbacks.
I mean, it depends on what the Diamondbacks do, right? If the Diamondbacks go on a tear, they're right there.
And this is the thing, right? So Arizona's 3.5 games out of the wild card.
And actually a good team instead of the Giants.
Matt Boyd from the Tigers, who has been mentioned because the Tigers are god-awful. Man, that run differential, 212 for the Tigers. Into the negative. Zach Wheeler from the Mets, who obviously gets overshadowed by all the discussion Noah Syndergaard.
He's hurt, right? Though. I think he's hurt right now.
He obviously is on the injured list, but he comes back tonight. He's coming off, and so there is a chance to see him pitch tonight prior to the deadline next week.
The Diamondbacks have a plus 64 run differential, by the way. That is as good as the Chicago Cubs. That's almost as good as the Oakland Athletics. That's better than the Cleveland Tito's, and it's almost as good as the Boston Red Sox. So, like, if you want to talk about a team that's actually on the precipice of, like, making the playoffs, that's the Arizona Diamondbacks.
The other pitcher who's been discussed is Ian Kennedy of the Royals.
Hey, no thank you.
That's... He's striking out above average of 28.6% of batters faced. He's posting his career low in walk rate and home run rate. And he has increased his velocity from 91.9 to 94.1 miles per hour.
Doing it in the bullpen, though, isn't he?
He's been in the bullpen, but he has looked better than he has in the past. And he has a history as a starter.
That's
as
fair.
Well. And again, not necessarily going to cost you as much.
I wouldn't necessarily mind considering him to be like an Andrew Miller type, right? You bring him in.
A fireman. Yeah.
Yeah, you bring him in to be a fireman, knowing that he has the ability to go two or three. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily mind that. I wouldn't like bank on it, but I wouldn't, you know, that's a low risk move.
No, that's absolutely. So last week we looked at the end of July schedule for Minnesota and Cleveland. And I was kind of wiping my brow in a little bit of nervous anticipation about the fact that Cleveland had such a cherry schedule and Minnesota had a tough one. Thankfully, managed to split, to take a win from the Yankees and take a pair of wins from the Athletics.
Nice.
So not as bad as I was too worried about. Obviously spanked the heck out of the White Sox last night and faced them three more times this weekend before the Marlins. Cleveland, meanwhile, thanks to your Jays, lost one to them, lost one to the Royals, so not quite as rosy a walk through the tulips as anticipated.
The one that the Tito's lost was, I watched that game, and it was actually an extra inning game where Justin Smoke hit a tying home run in the bottom of the ninth. And then he walked it off with a single in the 10th. And Trevor Bauer was incredible in that game. He was so good. Like, I can't believe how brutal that the Cleveland bullpen blew it was. It was like, Brad Hand's supposed to be good, and he didn't look good.
It was bad hand, yes. Before we go, we got to wrap it up and hand things over to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! I do want to tip my cap to Reggie Abercrombie, who earlier this week on Tuesday night, his seventh inning run broke a tie with David Espinoza and gave Reggie the all-time career runs record in American Association League history with 530 scored.
He's a legend.
Legend.
He's an absolute legend.
So good for him. Fish, of course, making hay this weekend. I think tonight is the Friday night is the Queen's We Will Rock You night. So a chance to win tickets to the Queen musical and a chance to hear some classic rock on the PA in between innings. There is, of course, a 60% chance of thunder showers, but hopefully that'll clear up by game time. And you can enjoy your evening and enjoy your weekend. Thanks for tuning into the Bench Jockeys.
Bye.
And to quote Chris Zook, play ball.